6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris at Lightforce. Joined virtually, as always, by Anna Forsyth at A4Sight03, the smarter, brighter, and more intelligent of the pair. Welcome, Anna.
Thanks, Chris. I mean, I think all three of those mean the same thing. But I'll take it as three wins.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I was intending to serve it up to you. Mm-hmm. I mean, if our listeners weren't aware, I mean, you were on the radio, CBC Radio, which is the mother network here in Canada. Not just anyone gets on the mother network.
Yeah, they had a colonial like me on. Yeah, the accent did get brought up. But yeah, I was on CBC Victoria at their All Points West afternoon show. Yeah, it was great. It was great fun.
Yeah, I listened to the interview. I thought you did well. And
thank you.
I liked the point did come up. Oh, you don't sound like you're from here.
Nope. I know. I expected it to, honestly. But
and you dropped the reality of the situation, but also the pity card. I got up at 3 in the morning to watch the Canucks lose.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a lie. Where's the lie?
No, it's not. I mean, and I think for listeners who are maybe newer, they may not realize that you really got into the Vancouver Canucks when you were here during 2011.
Right.
And.
But yeah, honestly, I was still like somewhat casual fan in 2011 when I was here. Like it was only the end of the regular season into the playoffs that I really started actually watching games by myself, for example. And then, yeah, really cemented my love at 3 a.m.
Well, I mean, if you get up, yeah, I was going to say, if you're going to continue to get up to cheer on this team at 3 in the morning when they just ain't playing so hot, there's no questioning your fan card. Even though there are those out there that would try to suggest you and I aren't real fans.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've had that before.
Anywho, speaking of real fans, we're going to talk about whether or not we're real fans of the way the team's been playing over the course of the past week.
Nice segue.
Suffice to say, it has been some interesting hockey from the team in blue and green with white trim.
They've certainly played a lot of it. Like, we can't deny that because they've gone to additional time, 2 out of 3 games. So,
yeah.
It's been, you know, bang for your buck in that instance.
So what you're telling me is the Canucks are a team that give you good value for your ticket money.
Yeah, maybe not like good value on the cap, but good value in terms of minutes played.
Brock Besser's not back yet as we're recording. I say that because the Vancouver Canucks play tomorrow or today, depending on when you're listening to the episode, or if well into the future, some time ago, he might be making a return at that point. The Hamonic situation is, I was going to say, become more clear, but really it's become quite a bit
clear as mud. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, well, what else has been going on? Well, we got to see some interesting stuff in Detroit.
Yeah.
Detroit.
Is that how they say it down there?
Oh, I don't know. I was watching a video. Mike Downey Live is the channel. He's actually a kid, local, does YouTube videos. He's currently traveling across the country, and he did a video recently where he took the VIA train to Canada's southernmost station, which is Windsor, across the river from
Detroit. Checks out. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyhow, I think he had said Detroit.
Now that's stuck in your head.
Yeah. I mean, I could say Detroit.
No, you're messing with me now. That's too much.
But no, we'll talk about the Canucks being back in action. Obviously, NHL culture is a recurring theme in every one of our episodes as of late. So why would this episode be any different? Big topic to tackle. And I don't know. We'll probably close out the show with all sorts of other fun stuff, as we are apt to do. So let's start rewinding. Oh, man. Vancouver Canucks kicking things off on the road. Not only just on the road, but sort of making their travels east.
Very far east. And then back again, and then down again. And
yeah, I mean, well, it's the reality of teams in Vancouver. I mean, I know we chatted about how, oh, it's so awesome. There's a team in Seattle. The Vancouver Canucks can make these quick trips. Hey, maybe we'll be able to travel to them. Not yet. But the thing about this is that the eastern road swings are still going to be crazy. And, like, everything's east. It doesn't matter, like, oh, they're only going to Edmonton or Calgary. I think that's actually not a bad trip. But it's when they, like, do Edmonton, Calgary, Detroit, Minnesota. Like, the Midwest is still east.
Yeah. And there's not that many teams in the Midwest. So it's mainly eastern seaboard and close to. So... yeah, there's always going to be a lot of distances. But yeah, Canucks starting on the road, playing random teams they don't usually play. That's just classic way for Vancouver to start a season.
Well, and actually, it got me thinking. Like, in years past, often these type of road trips coincided with, like, concerts and stuff going on at the Raj. I'm not aware of anything at the Raj right now.
No, I don't think so. I just think Vancouver just have no power whatsoever. They couldn't get a home opener on their, like, 50th season when they were naming a new captain. Like,
well, they had a home opener, just not the opening game of the season.
Yeah, opener at home, I guess, I mean. Yeah. But then they didn't give Seattle an opener at home either.
No, but at least, like, if you think about Seattle...
I don't think it's ready. The rink is ready.
I was going to say, was Climate Pledge Arena ready? Like, I don't... I mean, I actually don't know if it's ready for this weekend.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah.
It's a nice-looking building. Like, they've taken the Key Arena, and I know they essentially, you know, gut it down to its bones.
I think they... as far as I can tell, they took the top of the pie, rebuilt the pie, and then put the top back on the pie because the ceiling is the same.
Yeah, but it does look like a whole new experience. I would love to go down there and check out a game sometime in the next 5 years.
I was listening to friends of the show, Sound of Hockey, and they had Tim Lawhey. The brother that's not involved in the hockey part, does the arena part. Tim Lawhey. And he was talking about it. And honestly, it sounds like the kind of arena that I wouldn't actually want, but I really want to go see, if that makes sense. Like, I wouldn't want my team to have an arena that was, like, in a, like, 74-acre complex and has all these different bits to it. I want, like, an inner city, like, middle of downtown arena around everything.
Well, like, I mean, I was going to say, Key Arena is kind of downtown.
Yeah, but it's just like, it's almost like its own thing, right? It's like its own space, which sounds awesome to go visit, but, like, I kind of love to be, like, running off a bus or, like, running from a bar to into the arena and, like, have it part of this, like, completely part of the city. But yeah. But also, it sounds great, and I really want to go, but we'll go when we can.
Yeah. But before we get to that game, which we'll talk about later, let's talk about the week that was. So just to recap the Vancouver Canucks start of the season, the three games they've played, they've gotten points 2 out of 3. Mm-hmm. Can't really complain about that, right? Especially on a... Eastern road swing at the start of a season where the Canucks are notoriously slow.
Missing one of your top players.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the game against the Oilers, the Vancouver Canucks, you know, made some magic happen. They looked dangerous in an overtime, lost in a shutout 3-2. Fast forward to the game against the Philadelphia Flyers, the Vancouver Canucks took the first period off.
Yep.
Carter Hart took the rest of the game off.
Yeah, that's for damn sure.
Until the Canucks decided to take the final 90 seconds off or so. But they win in a shootout 5-4. So, you know, point it, at the end of the day, those 2 points that the Vancouver Canucks acquired against the Flyers are 2 points. It doesn't matter how pretty they were two, and they're the loser point that went to the Flyers means nothing to the Canucks.
Yeah. Then, I mean, out of division, who cares?
Yeah. And then that, that game against the Detroit Red Wings was a loss, albeit the Canucks, okay, did they bring their best hockey? I'd say that's debatable, but they met a red hot goaltender who,
and a red hot angry team.
Well, yeah. Am I upset that the Canucks lost to Detroit? No, I mean, the Canucks could have lost all three and I wouldn't have been upset. I am that positive this season that, you know what? I would have been, yeah, sure. Whatever, started the season, but to be at this point, three games in and have 3 points.
Yeah, it's not bad, eh? It was just a weird experience, that game in Detroit. I just realized what it reminded me of. You know, when like someone is annoyed at you and you're not really sure why, like your good friend, your spouse, whatever, and then they're not really sure why either, and then they realize that you got in a fight in your dream.
Sorry, the Detroit Red Wings is a team you've been dreaming about? Like, where are we going
with
this? No,
what I'm saying is, like, it felt like they were annoyed at us for something that we're not even sure we did.
Got it. Well, I mean, based on the comments afterwards, Garland is a player.
Yeah, and I will say just a quick shout out for The Athletic, because they called that derogatory language out, which is what it should be. Be something you say about like a player. No, 2021. Like Jesus Christ. Oh,
this is it could be 1949.
Yeah,
the way the NHL culture works. Like, you know, the thing about Garland's play, I'm curious, what's a reverse hit?
I mean, it's
like,
not,
I'm coming to hit you and you hit, like, what is it? Like, how is a reverse hit a dirty play? Like,
and
it implies that,
sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, it implies that you're going to hit a player and they in turn caught you on it and you weren't expecting. Like, I mean, I don't recall seeing the play in question.
I think also like reverse hits, you have to step into, not like have someone skate into your back. Like, you never want to see someone like hurt the head. And I think Connor Garland said the same thing, who's very diplomatic after the game. But I don't see what he could have done in that situation.
Well, he's okay. Garland, for those that don't know, is Cliff Ronning size. Like, I think I might be taller than him, which is,
I'm got a picture with Cliff Ronning and I was like, oh, okay. You're the first hockey player that I haven't felt dwarfed by.
Well, that's the thing. It's like the hockey, if you're 6 feet, you're considered to be shorter than most. And Garland is what, 5'10", I think.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how he lists himself on his Tinder profile, but.
But, you know, I'm not trying to nitpick this particular incident, but if I'm playing against a player of his stature, I understand that there are, like, heck, he could hit me, like, instead of being a reverse hit, a forward hit.
Yeah.
And guess what? Like, very similar contact may occur. Is it expected? I don't know.
It was just a player bending down and colliding with Garland's numbers, essentially. Like, unfortunate, but I don't think that was his fault. But the reffing was bad, and it wasn't just...
Oh, it never is.
I mean, Garland didn't think so. He might have said something else in private. The reffing was very, like... I mean, it was just inconsistent as we know it to be. Like,
that was what I was going to point. For me, it's the inconsistency that's driving me nuts. I don't care how a game is called, and I think this is very universal. It just is, if it's consistent, you want to go and whistle everything.
There's a
great,
rule book. Just call the rule book. Yeah, and okay. I don't think I'm being biased here in saying that. Like, Detroit got some iffy penalties. They got like penalty just for like taking the puck off Vancouver in the first period, and then they got a tripping penalty instead of high sticking, and it was just like, ugh, I don't really know what's going on here. But
was it the Edmonton overtime or the Philadelphia overtime? But there was a point where Petey was going in and ultimately got hooked. Like, you could see the stick come around and loses the puck, and he looks at the ref, and the ref's like, hands up, like, well, what do you want me to do about it?
Petey gets hooked so much in it, hardly ever gets called. But it's just like one of those skilled players, and I'm sure Vancouver do it to other skilled players, Chase and Connor McDavid or whoever.
Sure, but like, I feel like, to me, like, I'm a firm believer, call the stuff that takes away from the play. I want to see exciting hockey. And I know the counter of this, the rats, they're going to be drawing penalties left, right, and center. This ain't soccer. Well, I think there is a mechanism to actually make that happen in NHL much better than what we would see in, like, say, soccer. Like, in soccer, or for those who want me to say it properly, football. Simulation, which is the counter to someone trying to draw a foul, is considered a cautionable offense. And in that sport, a caution carries with it significant weight that a 2-minute minor penalty for unsporting conduct, or whatever they happen to call it these days, does. Yeah, 2 minutes in the sin bin potentially could cost my team a goal, but a caution, once I've got one, I am now a player who could potentially, you know, pass wind and get a second one and be off the pitch, dropping my team down for the rest of the game. So I feel like the NHL, if they were to go and apply the rule book in such a way that opened the game up, allowed for exciting play, you simply need to come down hard on the simulation. You think a player was diving? Throw them to the box. Don't give them to, as well as the actual offending player.
I'm 100% with you, because I think people say that, and I think it would be way less of an issue like than people think. If they call the rule book, I think they will just eventually find some balance in there, and maybe you do have to call a few more simulations than previous, but they'll figure it out.
It's, learn.
Yeah, and that's much less dangerous than what's going on right now.
Yeah. Talking a little bit about that Oilers game, the shootout specifically. It's the start of the season. One might suggest there wasn't as many opportunities as a coach may like in the preseason to get his shooters out there. But can you explain to me why you send Pearson?
He's done it so much. Travis Keith.
Is that Pekulzin?
Yeah, like Pig Pekulzin, like there are just like about half the team that I pick over Pearson. And that's not to dunk on Pearson at all. He's a good player, but he does not have the shootout skills necessary, really.
Well, who was it? I think it was AV used to send the Sedins out regularly, and the Sedins shootout just wasn't their thing.
Like, especially Henrik. Like,
yeah, right? Like, I mean,
it's not going to happen. Like, I think
they would tell you this.
Send out, like, three of, like, Miller, Petey, Hughes, Pekulzin, Hoglander. Am I missing someone obvious? I think those are the five, and Bo. Like,
I was going to say Bo, yeah. But Bo's, he's got shootout prowess. Like,
which
that,
you wouldn't expect.
That's a player you send out.
Maybe. No, I mean, like, from his play, but he is pretty good. But any of those three of those is fine.
To go a little bit off the rails, I kind of suspect Bo's got some skills that he doesn't, like, he feels to me to be that stereotypical Canadian hockey player.
Oh yeah, 100%.
And you know, like and what I'm getting to, it's like the you don't sort of, there's no flash.
Yeah, and to be fair to him, he's not really been allowed to be flashy, like with the responsibility he's had, like as a player his role and a captain. Allow for it. Like, but yeah, if you see him doing little like drills by himself or in warm-ups, he does have a very silky hands. He just doesn't always get to show that.
I was going to sort of bring up as well, like when it comes to coaches picking players for the shootout, like Mark Crawford got a lot of heat when he didn't sign Wayne Gretzky out I think it was the Nagano Olympics, Winter Olympics that Canada got eliminated out in a shootout. And the argument at the time was like, oh, how could you not see Wayne Gretzky? Wayne himself said, I wasn't good at this. Breakaways weren't my thing. I wouldn't send me out. And like, that's, I mean, again, you can say, well, Wayne's your best player, send him. But if a player is not good in this particular situation and there is someone else who happens to provide you this better opportunity, is me as a coach, I want a goal scored. I am going to send the person I think best get me that goal based on what they can do in that moment.
I mean, don't get me wrong, if the idea was to score from the other end of the ice, send Tanner Pearson out, 100%. Even with a goalie, hey, I kind of think Pearson could do better than most.
Wouldn't that have been beautiful? Mike Smith in net, too. Tanner Pearson scores from a slapper on his side of the blue line on a shooter. Yeah. Instead of taking it from like the center line forward, he somehow is able to bring it backwards.
Yeah.
And then take the slap shot.
That would be great. But yeah, like I just, Travis Green is just, as much as Pearson's forte is not shootouts, Travis Green's forte is not picking shooters for shootouts. So maybe it's something we have to face. I mean, they want it in two. They want it in the shortest possible time against Philly. But
yeah, but against Philly had no shooters. Oh, yeah, Connor Hart took the good portion of the game off. Oh, I missed the fun times that Connor Hart provided. By the time I was able to watch the game, I got to see the Vancouver Canucks take their 2 minutes off.
Right.
And I was slightly beside myself. A friend of mine messaged me. He's like, the Canucks are going to give me a heart attack. I'm like, I think you're going to have to get accustomed to this type of play this season.
Yeah, unfortunately. It's going to be high-risk hockey.
Yeah. But Pod Colson got a goal and found himself so happy he was given the opportunity to celebrate from the bench. Because didn't he get benched for the third period?
Oh, I see. Sorry, it took me a second to work out what you meant. Yeah. And, I mean, did I love it? No, but like, I don't think a goal necessarily gets you a free pass either.
No, and you know, there those talking about it were like, well, he's a young kid. Travis is, you know, shortening his bench in the third period, and I actually agree with all of that. But I'm kind of wondering, like, you've just seen the opposition goaltender have a heck of a period. Here's someone who, like, I'm not saying you play him regular time, but to essentially, you know, get to relive the moment while watching the rest of the game from your vantage point, wherever the heck it is on the bench he gets to sit.
Right.
Seems odd. I would have thought he would have gotten in his line a few more opportunities to get out. But
yeah, I guess it's the first three games. Like, and we used to Travis just doing crazy stuff like stapling lines to the bench or just switching up the line. So, yeah, I don't think it was necessarily the right move, but I don't hate it. Like, he's Pod Colson, goal aside, has been okay in the preseason and the first few games, but not special. But I think he'll earn some more opportunity and we will see a bit more from him, but yeah, not too concerned as yet.
Yeah, as the season goes on, I mean, we will see a lot more of him unless he somehow turns into Nikolai Goldobin, at which point we'll never see him again.
Right, but I don't think we need to.
Could you imagine what would happen to Faber if that happened?
I don't want to think about it.
Speaking of Quaz and Faber, they're on 650 now.
Yeah, I listened to most of their first show. It was pretty good.
Yeah, it was Quads, Faber, and Justin Morissette. which is
right.
I mean, that's some podcasting pros right there.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, and JMO was good contributions along the way. They had Frank Saravalli on.
Hey, Frank knows a few things about the sport. Has a couple connections, I hear.
Yeah.
Especially in Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, he was on the Canucks broadcast in Philly as well.
And then the other thing I wanted to give a shout out to is Clay, or Clay Who, as he's known, did a 24-hour live stream. Like, he kicked things off post-Philly and ran through to Detroit.
Yeah, it's funny because I was just, like, thinking about it, like, kept thinking about it during the week and then completely forgot about it until it was over. And I was thinking,
oh,
I felt a bit bad. Yeah, they didn't check in. But he, yeah, this is what an achievement, like the stamina.
Well, you know, I was thinking, like, he's slightly older than I am, not by a lot, but could I do 24 hours? I don't think I could. Like, with extra life game-based streams, I put in like 14 hours, and that takes a lot out of me. And Clay did 24. It helps to have guests. Like, one of the things I found with Extra Life is when I have someone to converse with and I can talk to, and they can sort of.
Yeah, but still, 24 hours straight. It's
help lift.
Killer.
Yeah, it was. But no, I mean, congratulations to Clay. I swung by a little bit late on Friday night. It was already 4 hours into the stream, getting crazy. At one point, he got up to go in, and I don't know if it was his daughter Kayla joined him for a bit, but he had this doll, like this just doll. Like, I think it might have been Kayla's doll years ago, on screen, sitting by the microphone, but he's not there. So I had to tweet out a picture of that.
That's creepy.
It was kind of creepy, but whatever.
Things get weird.
They do. I mean, all night streams.
Things get weird at our IOTA streams, and they're 30 minutes long.
Could you imagine you and I doing a 24-hour IOTA?
No, I could not.
Oh, God, it would be crazy. Which one of us would fall asleep first?
You.
Probably. Back on topic, though, as we sort of wrap up Rewind, Oliver Ekman-Larsson has apparently not completely lost his game, or hypothetically has found it, or what remnants existed for the first three games. He even scored a goal, which I thought was tweet of the year when I shared it as, oh, was that a goal? G-O-E-L.
Hey, you made the armies.
Well, I can't read the armies anymore because I let my subscription to the
There's certain ex-members of this podcast who still use our shared subscription, so you're more than welcome.
So I made the armies. Sweet.
Yeah. So Wyatt enjoyed your dad joke, at least.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It was like, I when it happened, I'm like, I've been sitting on it. Like, I can't remember how I even thought it up. And I'm like, oh my God, Chris, he came up with a funny. It's a very rare occurrence. And so when I tweeted it, it's probably the most lively tweet I've had that didn't include baby voice. Yeah. In a long time.
There you go.
But no, I mean, OEL's been playing well, and to the point where I'm like, man, this trade kind of worked out.
Well, the thing is, like, we're all in now, right? Like,
ask me again in 7 years.
Yeah. We're all in with OEL. And I think, honestly, Canucks Twitter, Canucks fans get bad rap, but I think everyone's been pretty fair with OEL and given him a chance, and he's proving us, like, he's proving himself so far.
Well, I think in fairness to those who did not like the trade, there were some who were just, I'm down on OEL, he's a shell of a player. But I think a large number of them were like, even it's not so much OEL as the player, he may have, you know, a new place, find his game, reinvigorate, but look at the deal.
Yeah. Because
whomever the GM is at the time that OEL starts to see a decline, and that will happen, and players get older, the GM won't be Jim.
Right. And that's the thing. It's just like, he's already been in decline for at least a year or couple years, basically. And we're starting to see an uptick again. Obviously, it's only been three games plus preseason, but.
Well, I mean, it was a heck of a price to pay for to get OEL. I mean, we had to give up two first liners.
Yeah, apparently.
And for those that don't know, Beagle and Roussel, I think it was against Columbus. They were first line.
Yep.
Louis was in the fourth line, which is odd because Louis in preseason was lights out. Lights out Louis, but.
Yeah. I think Beagle even started over time.
Really? Oh, that's awesome. See, that was a hefty price to pay for the Vancouver Canucks. Anyhow, we'll be right back. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Is that because he was mad?
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And, yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
Besser's back? Has it been confirmed he's coming back? Like, I know today Miller found himself in a bottom-pairing jersey, which potentially means, you know, Brock's coming back. But,
so,
I mean, there was a false alarm earlier.
To quote Rick Dhaliwal, the vibes are good. That's literally what he said today, which I'm just like, I don't know if you're young enough to be saying the vibes are good, Rick, but.
Okay.
We appreciate the insight, nonetheless.
The converse statement is Tommy Ilarshide head down to the dressing room to check out Pavel Bure's groin.
Right.
Which, in fairness to Tommy, he was just telling, like, he meant nothing by it. He truly went down to the dressing room, and Pavel Bure's groin felt all right. I'm sure it did. So what would you prefer?
The vibes are definitely off, Tommy checking
out the groin.
Tommy checking out the groin. God. But
I love Tommy. I mean, you know, I'm gonna go off rails here. Growing up, I never really understood Tom Larshide, and I heard him quite a bit because when it came to sports in Vancouver, he was color for both Vancouver Canucks and the BC Lions when I really got into sports. And he was the same Tommy Larshide in both hockey and Canadian football.
Right.
And at first I was kind of like, oh man, this guy, like I interpreted a lot of his sort of like his emotion, not as genuine as fake. Like it felt manufactured. But then as I got older, I came to realize Tommy is as genuine as they come. That's him. And that's when I think the light bulb went on that. This guy, he buys it. He feels it. Like this emotion is actually straight out of his soul. He's not, you know, like in some play-by-play in color, you're like, oh man, dial it back.
Well,
you're trying to be something you're not. That was never Tommy.
Can we talk about like how the play-by-play has just been a bit odd to start the season? Because,
well, Cheech went and got himself in protocol.
Yeah. And honestly, I think on their own, Corey Hirsch and Brendan Batchelor do a great job for radio. Like, I'm often doing that if I'm on the move. Like, I'll put on the radio call. And, of course, John and John are great. When you put the two of them together, like, there's just... It's very
chemistry.
Sweet, but, like, yeah, it's just a bit too polite. Corey Hirsch is talking too much because he's a radio guy, so he's trying to cool everything. Well, he's color, but you know what I mean. Like, he's talking just over. He doesn't want any silence, which isn't quite the TV feed. So, yeah, I'm excited to get our pairings back. Back on the ice, and then the broadcast pairings as well.
Yeah, broadcast chemistry is no different than on-ice chemistry, right? It's like when the two Sedins got split up, you know, people are like, why? Like, yeah, you're trying to, you know, reinvigorate them, but you know they're going to be put back together. It just doesn't feel right that way. In this particular case, it's been the same. Speaking of the radio, it's been Riccio, I think, that's been filling in for for Hirsch, right? Yeah.
I haven't actually heard it, but apparently he's doing a good job, which I'm sure, yeah, like he's experienced, so.
Sure. One final note about Cheech being in protocol is, I guess the Cactus Club got him some food, and he shared a picture of it. There's like wings. It looked like a burger, fries. There was one item missing, and I was very alarmed.
Yeah.
Can you guess what that item was?
Yeah, there was no ketchup, which...
Exactly.
I mean, it does make me feel a bit better, because all the stuff these had with ketchup in the past, I'm like, honestly, it's awful. But I think it might have been actually the Murphy household that got him that Cactus Club stuff, which is a nice little gift.
But they left out the ketchup. I mean, as much as it's a nice gift, how can you not give Cheech the ketchup?
Well, hopefully he feels better soon, and he'll be there for the home games, we hope.
Yeah. Back to Brock, though. If he does return, based on the lineup we saw dressed today, we're recording this on Monday evening, it looks like JT Miller is finding himself down the lineup some, but off the wing and into the middle.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
It's weird. I mean, I don't like it, but I did complain last episode of like players' good play not being rewarded in Di Giuseppe. So I can't then go back on that and say Höglander doesn't deserve to be played in the top line. So I don't like it, because I think the Lotto line is still the business. But Höglander's been playing pretty well. So I don't hate it either.
Well, I'm actually, so my thoughts are along the lines of, you have to, like, you look at the player's utility. Like, you need to move someone to the middle.
Yeah.
Conceivably, like, based on the moves you're making. How else do you solve it? Like, you don't have
the utility. Yeah, and who can play the players down the lineup? JT Miller can. Like, and honestly, yeah. I think it was Faber and Quads talking about it at the weekend. Could have been someone else, but that might earn him an Olympic spot, his ability to play different roles and play down the lineup. So if you do have that option and you don't want to break up like the Höglander Pedersen little duo there, well, then why not try it?
I mean, I feel that duo has looked really good.
They have. We can't deny that. So we'll have to wait for our Lotto line.
Well, the lotto has gone belly up. Matt's probably, you know,
yeah,
in a tough spot right now.
It's true. It must have got them such good publicity, and now they're just waiting.
Well, they'll introduce some provincial lottery based on whatever the new lineup happens to be.
40-21.
Yeah, sure. You're right. This doesn't work.
No.
Miller, though, and just on his note, while yes, he has the utility and this might provide him the opportunity to showcase, you know, case in point, it's Olympic season. I wouldn't say we've been seeing the JT Miller that we have grown accustomed to. But then it sort of got me thinking, have we really seen the JT Miller of 2 years ago? Yeah, like,
no,
and you know, Bubble Miller and...
That season was just a heck of a season. So, but I agree that we are seeing a bit of a downgrade, but I like him a lot more in the preseason and early season than I did last year. I think he had a really tough year last year, and I don't think he was very happy or settled.
Well, I mean, there were a lot of players that weren't happy or settled last year.
But he definitely...
For a variety of reasons.
I mean, we know Miller's an emotional player, right? Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. So I do think he does react more and, like, respond more to environment than some other players. So I do think he's going to do better this year than he did last year, but maybe not if he's moving up and down the line constantly, but...
Well, my take on this is, if let's say Miller does become the third line center, but plays well in that role, that's actually good for this Canucks team. It gives us an opportunity to have three lines you can roll out at any given time, depending on situation, and functionally threaten. the Canucks have been arguably either a one-line or potentially two-line team. Where they become dangerous is the moment they have three lines. And that's really with any team. The moment you have three dangerous lines, you tend to be a much better team than your competition.
Oh, yeah. And we talked before the season as to thinking they might have three lines at last with Dickinson on the third line. But given Brandon Sutter's out, it doesn't hurt to have the additional center depth. Like, we don't know when Brandon Sutter will be coming back, if at all. So if you can push that out, like, and actually get some legit scoring depth through three lines, then that's a good thing.
Yeah. The other sort of change, which is was happening with the Canucks, isn't a change per se. It's simply an expansion on what we don't already know by making it more what we don't already know. And what we're talking about is Travis Hamonic. Mm-hmm. So for those who may not be as up to speed on Hamonic, so over the course of the offseason, there were reports that there was something going on between him and the team. And the presumption was is that it had to do with vaccination status. Again, simply a presumption. It was never clearly stated that he had not yet acquired his vaccination or any of the sort. Like, and I'm not trying to suggest that that's the case or not, though scuttlebutt is that it might be a problem.
Right.
And what's interesting is that the verbiage the Vancouver Canucks have used as to being vaccinated is the moment Hamonic is placed on waivers and assigned to Abbotsford, the team starts saying they're 100% vaccinated. But prior to that, they continue to say, we will be by the start of the season.
Right.
So people are sort of trying to fill in the blanks, paint by numbers, so to speak.
Let's just say, if it has nothing to do with the vaccination status, like, Canucks have once again fumbled completely on this, because they've said, you know, he is coming tomorrow to camp and we will be 100% vaccinated. That never happened. And then he was put on waivers. We are now 100% vaccinated, as you say. They've made some vague comments that it's not quite what you think.
Yeah, I was going to read their PR statement that was released today. Statement from Jim Benning. General Manager Jim Benning announced today that defenseman Travis Hamonic has been placed on a temporary leave of absence. The mutually agreed upon leave of absence will give Travis time as he works through his personal matters. The team asks that media respect Travis's privacy, and the club will not be making any further comments on this matter at this time. Now, here's some. I look at this. I think a player's personal matters are personal. I'm not going to ask to know what's going on. I am curious. I think there's sort of this human nature to be curious about what it is that I'm invested with. And I would be more than happy to suggest that the Vancouver Canucks are approaching this the right way. The problem, their approach, to your point, has been all over the place.
Yeah.
Like, it's not as if the Vancouver Canucks have been consistent. They've actually introduced much of the doubt, and they've almost fostered this conversation. And it may have been that they, in dealing with the situation, haven't had a clear picture themselves. And maybe they're trying to go about this in a way that's respectful to the player, and fine. But, like, if we consider the context of this season, the NHL and many teams have made it very clear that vaccination status is an important topic, one that they are willing to talk about.
Yeah. And so it is a public health topic. Like, even if you're just considering the public as your teammates and the staff. Like, it's not just a you thing.
Well, and so, but here's my point is that if the league has allowed for this conversation and they've been, like, forthright with it, why not come out and say it has nothing to do with his vaccination status and we're not going to talk about it?
Yeah.
Like, make a statement unless you cannot say that, at which point, again, you as a team, I think, need to differentiate. You've set the fire. In fact, you fan the flames, mm-hmm. like Jim himself. contributed to this. He was throwing fuel, and it's blaming the media. The media weren't the one holding the fuel tank.
Yeah. I mean,
the media were one saying, hey, I see smoke and there's a fire in front of you.
I honestly think, like, the Canucks media would just leave it alone if they said, guys, like, it's not to do with vaccination status. Just leave it alone, guys. And they would, 100%. And also the fact that, as pointed out by friend of the show, Sam, today on Twitter, there's Travis Hamonic wasn't just put on a leave of absence. He was put on an unpaid leave of absence.
Well, yeah, like, we've seen many other situations where players have been, you know, granted leaves of absence for a variety of issues. I mean, Carey Price is an example, or he is focusing on what he needs to ensure that he and his family are healthy. This situation, while similar, is different. Like, there's more to this story. And, you know, to simply say, oh, the media is being disrespectful, unfortunately, is as, you know, disrespectful as you might think it is, they, as a function, have a job to do, and you, as the broadcast source, have done a piss-poor job managing it.
Yeah.
In this humble podcaster's opinion.
And let's not forget that Jim has done a bad job of PR since day one.
Oh, Jim, and just, oh, God. Like, I don't understand why they keep trotting him in front of the microphone. Jim can't do it.
No. And seeing as we do actually have two very professional people in the Sedins within the organization.
Oh, I understand what you're saying, but you can't do that. As soon as the Sedins get in front of the microphone at this point.
Well, it's too late. Worse. It's too late now.
No. But like Jim Benning, I mean, I have given him grief since he's been a GM of this team, but if there's one thing that I've always understood, PR has not been a strength of his. It's not his wheelhouse. That would be no different than asking me to write with my left hand. I can't do it. I'll try. I'll give it the honest effort. But it's just not going to look pretty.
Mm-hmm.
The worst thing that I think ownership did was when they removed Trevor, who was articulate and could talk, they didn't go in at that time, find someone to get in front. Like, it didn't have to be a president. It could have been an AGM.
Yeah.
Like,
and it literally, all they had to do was be a spokesperson, like be a face, be good at talking and spinning and whatever it is. And Trevor was great at it. He was good looking. He was charismatic. He was great at talking. He was great at deflecting. So they needed something else.
Yeah. They just, they can't do that now. It doesn't matter who they go and throw out. If it's the Deans, it's a bigger problem. If they hired someone in this role, like, it's just, the optics at this point are unfortunate. It's Jim's microphone and whether he wants it or not. And I don't think he really does. I'm actually going to talk about Gillis a little bit. Mike Gillis, when he was on the radio doing interviews with 1040 at the time, many of those conversations didn't go so well.
Oh yeah, when Gillis, he would start sweating.
Well, but like Mike Gillis was, dare I say it, too smart. And he
often didn't present well.
No, I mean, he was like the Big Bang Theory's Sheldon Cooper. Like, oh God, I'm laughing at my own jokes because they're so smart. No, but you know what I mean, right? I'm so smart and intelligent that I just made a funny. And the problem is the people you're telling the joke to, they're not there with you. You kind of left them a stop or two behind. They didn't quite get there. Or then when he tried to be funny, he tried to change his image. There was a conversation with him and Bob Marjanovic where he, and I take this for what it's worth. I mean, Mike Gillis honestly thought he and Bob had a rapport and that he could go and talk about Bob's weight on air. And it landed flat.
Yeah.
The Moj interpreted it the way most listeners did. And again, Gillis, that wasn't his space.
No, not at all.
But Jim, it's the same sort of thing. You need someone who can deal with the media. I'm not saying Jim doesn't ever talk to them. You trot Jim out the right spot. Francesco was on the radio, and as much as he might be able to talk, you know, good on House Radio for asking him tough questions and not letting him back away from it. Like Richo asking about JV18 and the status of the investigation.
It's crazy that he didn't prepare for that question. Like,
well, this begs to ask, is it because the investigation isn't an investigation? Or is it just that ownership?
Well, they said when that he got bought out that the investigation was ongoing. If it isn't, we deserve to know about that, right? And
well, I don't think we'll never hear the results of the internal investigation. It's I actually think they're going to do the exact same thing as the NFL did when they investigated the Washington football team. They're going to find if they say anything, it'll be something completely unrelated, and something will happen.
Yep, way to go, hockey culture. I mean,
that scenario was crazy. For those that don't know, long and short of it, National Football League investigates a team and an owner, and in that investigation, determined that a coach on an entirely different team, who wasn't even employed by the league at the time, made some pretty horrendous statements. Statements he needed to be held account for. He is the one person.
Right. I only got part of it.
Tens of thousands of communication.
Yeah, it doesn't got caught sound up in it. Seems like quite a few people got let off the hook there.
Oh yeah, very much so. It's just stupid. But you know, segue sort of from this into the hockey culture. I mean, one of the topics that came up was bill culture and how fentanyl has been utilized as a painkiller. And it arguably cost a young player his life. I mean, Jimmy Hayes passed away. And at the time, no one quite understood what had happened. There was some thought, like, was it related to like a hockey-related injury? Mm-hmm. But what has now come out, and his family chose to share this, was that essentially fentanyl, among some other drugs, were found in the system, and he died of an overdose. Now, we do understand that addiction is a serious issue, but what is quite compelling about this is that Jimmy Hayes got hooked on the pills because they were given to him quite readily by the teams that he was playing for.
Yep.
To ensure he could play. And he identified he had a problem. He actually spoke to his father and said, "I need help."
Yeah.
And weeks earlier, his father had helped him get into a program to shake it. But his father, who himself has said he is an addict, he's like, addiction's always there. It's a monster that comes back. And in Jimmy Hayes, it cost him his life. Well, Jimmy's not the only one. Like, I think it's quite apparent.
Yeah.
There'd be no reason why anyone out here doesn't think that, oh, pills aren't a problem. It's a, you know, very minor component of the league. Heck to know.
The fact that people literally dying, like, because of this pill culture, like Garrett Bogard, that was 2011. That was 10 years ago. He got addicted to painkillers because of what he'd been prescribed. Because as a bottom of the lineup player, his only value was on the ice and getting tough and fighting.
Yeah.
Fighting's becoming less of a thing, but that doesn't mean that injuries and the pressure to play through injuries is going to become less of a thing. Has to be a conscious effort, because that's just the, like, hyper-masculine culture of hockey is to, like, team first, you know? I'm not going to let down my team. I'm getting back on the ice. And it's funny how that team first culture, like, NHL are ready to drop it as soon as it's convenient, because mm-hmm. it's personal responsibility now. Like, it's on the player to get healthy and get clean and all that.
Over the course of the offseason this summer, I ended up picking up Finding Murph. It's essentially a story about Joe Murphy, who, as a former NHL player, who I don't know as of today, but as of very recently, was homeless.
Right.
And it's a book by Rick Westhead. And as the story goes, I'm trying to think of the goaltender now, but essentially another former player goaltender was talking to Rick and said, "Hey, I think I saw Murph on the street." And there had been some stories about Joe Murphy and sort of scuttlebutt, but it goes and sort of articulates his career from his youth, picking up hockey a little bit late, to being the star player, getting put into a weird situation in the NHL, being drafted into a team he probably wasn't prepared to play for. He ends up suffering some injuries, gets into a fight, and from there is provided pills, among other things, but never fully recovers from that and then falls into, unfortunately, a cycle where he spins deeper and deeper and deeper. Now, is this completely on NHL within in the context of Murphy? No. There's many characters that are involved, unfortunately, that facilitated his fall. But what's apparent from this sort of telling of the story, Rick Westhead starts going into context, like when did the NHL truly understand like CTE as being an issue, or head injuries or concussions and what have you. And he actually starts referencing some of the email that came to the light where the NHL, you know, and their legal team are quite clearly, no, we're not going to talk about this. We can't do this because that admits that that's a problem. But the thing about this is they're acknowledging head injuries at a point when they're still denying that head injuries even exist. Like it's just the epitome of hockey culture. I mean, sports culture, unfortunately, but
hockey culture in particular is pretty troubling in terms of like playing through pain and that narrative, even just like the casual, like it's often talked about in terms of, you know, sexual assault. It doesn't start with someone assaulting someone, right? It's the casual misogyny that men live through. But think of that in hockey, like the memes that you see that, you know, like football players, soccer players pretend they're hurt, hockey players pretend they're not. And that's like something to be admired. And it's just, it's troubling. Whether it is the head injury standpoint or the painkiller, like Ryan Kessler has shared, like how he was basically given tramadol out like candy, and he's so deep in the culture that he said he'd do it all again. And you just think,
I just
like good on him for sharing the story. I appreciate his honesty, but
well, that's the thing. So you know, the fact that he'd do it again, that needs to raise some serious question marks, because you like if the league is saying, well, it's we can't stop the player, it's personal responsibility on them. Oh no, it's not, because the player has told you, we'd totally do this again for all of these reasons. You as the authority that is above could actually introduce impediments to that quite easily.
Yeah,
but why would you? Because that might cost you a little money, it might potentially cost you a few fans. I just feel the NHL is so backwards. Like they could go and become leaders in this space. They're not the NFL.
Yeah.
In North America, they have the ability to go and differentiate themselves, and doing so could potentially put pressure on the other leagues. It could elevate the league. It could potentially introduce the league to new fans, new markets. And
yeah, I mean, it's why it's always going to be a niche sport. Like, not to say that the other leagues don't have a problem with it, but NHL is so like stuck in its ways when it comes to race, sexuality.
You mentioned misogyny, and you know, the Duncan Keith interview with Karen Thompson got brought up because someone had asked about Duncan Keith and why Vancouver Canucks fans have held a grudge against him for so long. And it's like, it's more than a Daniel Sedin hit.
Yeah. Which was pretty bad in and of itself.
Well, it was. But like when Karen Thompson asks him about that in the dressing room, he goes and applies that one, if you've never played the sport, how can you have an opinion? But then also ensures to reference her gender as being a factor too. Because, you know, Duncan Keith is the epitome of good sporting player.
Yeah.
And he might have changed over the years, honestly. I don't know. I don't care. But
I wouldn't, given his vax comments, I doubt it.
Yeah. I just, that the league is still that way.
Yeah. And we've seen like the CHL stuff that came up a few years ago, and I don't think that's going anywhere. Oh, and actually, just recently, there's two players playing in the queue who have only just been suspended, even though their team knew that they had been accused of sexual assault like months ago in the summer.
Yeah, because they're innocent until proven guilty.
I mean, as Sam has said 100 times on Twitter, that's the legal standard. That's not how you should run a hockey team.
Oh, hell no. I mean,
especially like in the like minor leagues, they're so tied to their community. You really think they should be taking care of that community better, but they don't see it that way.
I've genuinely wondered if given the opportunity, let's say you and I are given the opportunity to own a team. It could doesn't have to be an NHL team. It could be a semi-professional team. It could be a junior team. You and I are given the opportunity to own a team. And you and I set a particular standard that we want our players to uphold. Presuming we can put together a team that is competitive, because regardless of whether you're a good moral team, you still need to have a competitive team to engage your fan base. Would that move the needle? Would fans be okay with us cutting a player because their standard is, you know, they're not meeting it? And I think, like,
I mean,
I'd like to think it would, but you're right. We don't know.
But that can't be a reason. Someone needs to do that. Exactly. Like, I mean, there's so much to undo in terms of culture, but like, let's start by like giving classes on consent, giving like, just allowing like therapists to be part of your like be part of your team, and just emphasize that, like, I'm not saying like everyone thinks that like talking about your feelings is soft, but honestly that's what makes better players, and that's like shown in modern sport. It's if you have that sport psychology element that makes players like mentally tougher by being more open. But yeah, as it stands, like, stuck in the past.
Yeah, and I'm taking us a little off the rails, but I feel somewhat related to my own growth. There's a series, a limited series on Netflix called Made, which I've binged. I've watched all the episodes. I would encourage anyone who has a Netflix subscription to watch it. I am going to tell you that there is both a trigger and content warning as it deals with abuse, essentially domestic abuse, domestic assault. But without giving a lot away, the form of assault is emotional abuse. And the presentation of the topic and the episodes as they were portrayed had me personally wondering, like, is this me? Like, am I the antagonist in this? Because I will be the first to admit, when I am angry, I have a voice. Mm-hmm. I am not physical. I've been known to kick inanimate objects to hurt myself because for some reason in my mind, it seems like a great idea at the time, but it's my voice. And the first thing I did is when I had a conversation, like, is this me? But see, I think for me in the realm of personal growth, I had the wherewithal to question
self-reflect
right? that's what's like, that happens through this exploration and this piece of education. And I think that's what's missed. It's the self-reflection and the indication of growth. I am imperfect, and it's not to suggest that I have not been in a situation or myself with, like, it's not intent.
Right. But I just don't, I'm all for taking personal responsibility, but, like, we're talking about men who have spent their entire lives since they were children. Yeah. I'm just saying,
they're indoctrinated.
They're completely indoctrinated in the culture. And when they see their league, like their professional league, like just letting stuff like sexual assault and that get covered up and not do anything about it, they let teams draft someone who has been convicted of sexual assault, not do anything about it.
Oh,
yeah,
and then claim, oh, we were going to do good.
And
yeah, I bet you
will. Yeah. And not make any moves to really change the culture when it comes to dealing with pain and injury and medication, then, like, how can any player be expected to think any differently?
True. And I wish I had the answer.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we do, but I wish I could
implement it.
Have the answer as to what would make this change possible. But it's not a topic that I think you or I'll ever look to shy away from. No. And I think you'll, as a listener speaking to you who are tuning in, you'll find that, that Anna and I will continue to talk to people who, you know, have experienced that in the many different sort of paths that can be involved. Oh, it's just a frustrating league to, like, I hate to love it. Like, I'm in this relationship where at what point do I stop watching? I will admit I'm not as invested as I once was because of a lot of this.
Yeah. And honestly, like, football is having plenty of the same conversations with Newcastle United just being bought by the Saudis. And I mean, Manchester City, like, there's a lot of dirty money in the Premier League, and it's just really hard.
No.
It's very hard to, when you love the sport so much,
mm-hmm.
It's hard.
And to think I never played.
I don't have an answer. Hockey. Yeah, I don't have an answer to any of it. I'm just saying it's hard.
Well, in the words of Duncan Keith, we've never played the game, so why does our opinion matter?
Right.
Because that's the only opinion that matters is you know, it's like, why do you care about X? You've never done this. Oh. Okay, that's a good way the world should work.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I kind of feel we've got to this point in the show where I don't want to leave us on this sort of depressed note, but I don't know how we,
I don't know if there's a way to
look to
pick it up from this, yeah. But that's okay. Well, we just ongoing discussion.
Yeah. Just as we sort of wrap things up, looking at the week ahead, the Vancouver Canucks have themselves three more games on the road before such time as they head home. The big game of the three, however, is happening on a Saturday. Hockey night in Canada, except that it's not in Canada. It is in Seattle, when the Vancouver Canucks are in Seattle to help open up the Climate Pledge Arena. If you're looking forward to more Canuck Kraken action, you'll have to wait. The next time that those two teams actually play again, I don't believe is until like post-Christmas. Yeah, the 27th is when the two teams play again. That's when the Kraken make a trip up the highway here. But we might have a few things in the works.
Pay attention to our socials, for sure.
Yeah, and obviously C4 Discord. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there could be things happening. The one thing is for certain, Anna and I are not going down to Seattle to watch the game.
That's for sure.
One, getting down there is not all that easy.
We'd have to.
Two, getting home is pricey.
Yeah.
Well, it's stupid expensive to get down there. It's stupid expensive to come back.
You have to pay for a test.
To pay for the test.
Tickets.
And
yeah.
the tickets are probably stupid expensive.
Yeah. So,
as they should be. I mean, not, hockey is on fire in Seattle right now.
Not feasible, but it will happen.
But, you know, I shouldn't knock the fact the Vancouver Canucks are taking on expansion cousins, the Buffalo Sabres, and a game against the Chicago Blackhawks before such time as they get to Seattle. But let's be real. I mean, most people are already looking at Saturday, and they've got that game circled on their calendars.
I'm excited.
I am, too.
Also, just to have a game at normal time.
Hockey. What are you talking about? Like, 4 p.m. starts aren't normal? Mm. Yeah. Speaking of the Kraken, just briefly, COVID protocol, unfortunately, did them a disservice to kick their season off. They haven't had the best of times themselves on the road. They played tonight. They lost tonight. So.
Yeah.
C'est la vie.
Yeah. Philly certainly did a number on them. So yeah. That number being 6, because they scored 6 goals.
But other things that we've seen from down the I-5, friends of the show, Sound of Hockey, they all, I don't know if Andy went, I think he I did. Think but I know
three of them went to the first game, at least.
Darren went down to Vegas and flew home first thing the next morning, because that's what anyone were to do on a day trip to Vegas is leave first thing the morning after.
Jeez, that takes some discipline.
I'm not one to get all into the Vegas hype.
No, but if I'm going to a hockey game, leaning into it.
Oh, doesn't matter where I'm going to go. I doubt I'm going to fly home on like one of the first flights out of the place. The other thing I found cool was John had talked about the flight into Vegas and that they had like a hairy landing.
Oh, yeah.
I've only been to Vegas a few times, and I can assure you I've never been on a plane that's landed like that both times, where people are clapping, not because like, hey, we're in Vegas. It's like, thank goodness you got the plane off.
Funny. I don't remember it. Like, I've only been there once. All I remember is how close the airport is.
Well, yeah, you see the strip at the airport's right there, and there's so much air traffic. Maybe not so much now, but
yeah,
in normal times. And the heat,
that can't help.
You're watching like planes, like they're landing and they're flying all which way. It's like, nonstop,
on very small aircraft, so it didn't particularly stand out as that bad. I've had some bumpy landings in my time, so
yeah. The both times it was an experience. One of the trips, I'd never taken off out of Bellingham Airport before. And for those that have never traveled out of Bellingham, the way the runway essentially it's one way, it's like a north south ish runway, but the wind doesn't always cooperate. So without the ability to sort of change, you know, the direction as to which planes can go with the wind, sometimes they have to get themselves up to speed a lot quicker. And so our plane that we're on, the captain, you know, the engines are revving up and it's like, man, they got them really going here. Well, they had the brakes on, they let go of the brakes. And I kid you not, it felt like the nose shot up right away as we were peeling out of the airport. Gosh. And then went like straight up.
Well,
like we needed to get the 30,000 feet in a second or two.
I'll tell a super quick landing story and then we can get out of here. But my hairiest landing would be landing on an airstrip in the middle of a safari park where they literally have to quote unquote buzz the landing to get rid of the grazing animals. To get
the island. Yeah, yeah.
So you end up like flying pretty close to the ground and then banking sharply backwards before you can land.
I was going to say that like, there's nothing that can beat the hairiest landing I've been on, which was in like Montreal, where I swear I was watching us land from like the window, like as if we were like the wing was flying straight to the runway because of the crosswinds.
Yeah.
But that's pretty normal. What you had to do in the safari, that's next level.
Yeah. Sorry to one up you.
Yeah, we did not buzz the airport in Montreal to scare off the, I don't know, airport workers. Here we are wrapping up another solid show. Been over an hour. It's nice to sort of get back into the swing of things. There's sort of some normalcy sort of on my side of the world, which is nice, albeit still crazy times that we live in. But there's some stability that getting to talk to you provides me. So as I always do, thank you so much for helping me find stability in it.
You're so welcome. I don't think many people say that about me. So,
well, I can't speak for other people. I can only speak for me. For those of you who are still listening, you can find us at c4podcast.com. You obviously want to join in the conversation in Discord. C4 Discord is the greatest place. Discord.io/C4podcast, friendly place for Canucks fans. Almost as friendly for Kraken fans. We have a few in there.
We do.
And I'm trying to foster the Kraken conversation, but I want to be genuine about it. I'm not just going to go and drum something up, but I want to learn more about what's going on in Seattle. So if you happen to listen to the show and you are a fan of the Kraken, join our Discord. Take part in the conversation. You can find us online as well. We're on social media at the C4 Podcast. I believe our podcast is easily playable on Facebook now. Facebook has told me that our podcast has been added. So if someone is following our Facebook page, it is possible you'll see the Anna version of the podcast post and the automatic version. I do not know.
Okay. I mean, I could start doing it, but my posts are fun, so maybe I'll just keep going.
Oh, no, they are. I would not ask you to stop. Facebook, I find, is like crazy voodoo. I don't know how their algorithm works.
Yeah. Oh, God. Anything run by Facebook as well. Instagram. Who knows how that is sorted.
Hey, I think you want to see this post from 6 weeks ago because it's really interesting. I have no idea why the algorithm thinks it needs to show me someone eating grilled cheese.
Oh, grilled cheese.
Well, I like grilled cheese, but like, why now? Yeah. Anyhow. Oh, Anna, what final words of wisdom do you have for everyone?
Well, talking of wild animals, we've got to go face the buffalo sabers.
The buffalo slugs.
Yeah, so hopefully it won't be as wild as the Detroit game.
Would you have picked the Detroit game to be wild, though?
No, not at all.
So, I mean, this Buffalo game could be, like, next level for all we know.
Yeah, exactly. I forget what slight we delivered Buffalo, but I'm sure they'll think of something.
Jack Eichel apparently could be on his way to Colorado. Rumor has it they made a phone call. No idea what Colorado gives up to get Jack, but I don't see how Colorado in their current state makes that play. But
final thoughts. My German flatmate told me that Eichel means something completely different in German, so look it up. I'm not going to say it on the podcast. Just look it up.
Well, I know. No, I'm going to ask you when we stop the show. The patron-only show. What does Eichel mean? Maybe we'll have an OTR on that. final words of wisdom from me. As always, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being loyal listeners. For patrons, look for an episode of Off the Rails to go live shortly if it hasn't done so already. We are going to be back in the swing of things on that. The newsletter is going live. I want to find all the different ways to connect with you. The C4 Fantasy Hockey League. Seems to be in full swing. Yep. The stanchion has invaded. He threatened you, Anna.
He threatened me. I mean, I wasn't scared because it's...
And you threatened him back.
That's why, he's not scary whatsoever, but he did threaten me. He tried.
But no, it's good to see the community is lively, and what that means to me is hockey is back. So on behalf of Anna at A4603, myself, Chris at Lightforce, you're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast on Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Drop us a review if you haven't done so already. Remember, it's 5 stars. Podcast sucks. And if you would be so kind, smash that subscribe button on whatever podcast application you happen to be listening to us in, because, hey, you've reached the end of the show. Might as well. We out.